Chapter 10.
Yes. I regret that we did hear Mara Jade Skywalker threaten Chief of State Solo. She told him to leave Ben out of it, and that she would skin him alive, and that it was his last chance to drop something called Sith, or take what was coming. It seemed most unlike her.
Senator Nob Haas, Bith Delegation, to Captain Lon Chevu, GAG, logging threats against Joint Chiefs of State Solo and Neothel. Freighter Spirit of Commerce, en route for Endor, Cargo Bay. Ben Skywalker reached inside his jacket to touch the small forensics droid again, avoiding the eye of the flight engineer. He wasn't in the mood to chat. But the two freighter crew were bored out of their skulls and seemed to preserve their sanity by interrogating any ad hoc passengers. Ben was the only one hitching a ride this trip, huddled in a space between giant sealed containers lashed down to the deck of the cargo bay. He settled on looking angst-ridden and teenaged.
"I can only drop you at the trading base. You know that, don't you?"
Ben looked up. The uncommunicative teenager act didn't work any longer. He was tall, showing the first fluffy traces of beard, and he was suddenly aware that nobody had called him kid in passing these days. He must have looked as old as he now felt.
"I know," he said. "Thanks."
"Have you actually been to Endor before?"
Ah, the engineer was worried for him.
"Yes, I know folks there. Someone's meeting me."
"Just checking. I wouldn't want to dump my worst enemy in that place. Ewoks. Savages. I'd shoot them all, to be honest."
"Some of my friends are Ewoks," Ben said mildly, not wanting a fight, but unable to let it pass. "And I feel safer in the forest than I do in Galactic City."
"No offense."
"None taken."
The engineer walked away slowly, gripping hand over hand along the deckhead rail to pick his way between the tanks and containers that would be filled with plants and fungus for the pharmaceutical industry on the return journey.
"Coruscant. Yeah, I know what you mean. If it's not the lowlifes and gangsters, it's the secret police."
"And some of my best friends are secret police. They truly are."
But Ben kept his mouth shut this time. It was the last leg of a tortuous route back to the Jedi base, and in a couple of hours he'd be safely among family and friends. And so would the forensics droid, still holding its samples from Jason's Stealth X in its sealed compartments. It was encased in Flexirap, just in case. Ben felt it was his last tenuous link to resolution and some kind of peace.
"Where do I start with Dad? Have I got all the evidence I need? And when, how, do I tell him that Mom came back to see me?"
Out of all the things that plagued Ben in his quiet moments, when there was no distraction to stop him picking over events until they were just jumbled bones, that one was the most frequent. It was a privilege he was pretty sure Luke hadn't been given, and it made Ben more uncomfortable as the days passed.
Why just me?
He'd become less accepting of mysteries and the will of the Force since he'd lived in Lon Chevu's world of show me and prove it. He wanted to know why these days, 99 times out of 100, and maybe every time from now on. The Spirit of Commerce sat down in a clearing a few hundred meters from the trading post buildings. Ben did diplomatic handshaking and promised to use the service again sometime. He walked through saplings, trying to reclaim the cleared land for the forest, bag over one shoulder, aware of eyes everywhere in the undergrowth and above him in the branches, and found himself thinking tactical thoughts about what a tough planet this would be to invade and occupy. Luke was already waiting for him. His father sat on a sawn-off stump as big as one of the huge circular park seats in the Sky Dome Botanical Gardens at home, wearing his flight suit.
Home.
What did that mean?
Dad.
Ben had no problem throwing his arms around his father now and crushing him to his chest. He couldn't remember why he'd felt awkward about it even a year ago. Grown men in the GAG, the toughest guys he knew, hugged and cried and didn't care what they looked like doing it. I can't tell you how glad I am to get back.
You look whacked.
Been busy. He'd tell me if Mom had appeared to him, wouldn't he?
Ben prodded Luke's flight suit, trying to get the banter going.
Been putting in flying hours, then? Worried about skills fade?
Going to be putting in more, Ben.
What did I miss?
Jason's lined up to take Fondor, and we've put one Hydra spanner in his works, and we're going to add a few more. Oh, and Han and Leia are still scouting for a new base. Luke started walking to a rank of parked swoop bikes in various stages of decay. None of them gave a hint that the Jedi fighting elite was holed up here. He half turned as he walked, gesturing to his chest.
You taken up smashball? You nearly broke my ribs with whatever's in your jacket.
It was as good a time as any.
It's a CSF remote forensics droid. It's evidence.
Luke swung his leg across the saddle of the first bike in the line. Ben climbed up behind him.
My son the soldier, now my son the cop.
Did you find anything?
Your expression says you did.
Yes, I did.
The bike shot off.
Plenty.
Luke twisted his head to look at Ben, and...
Hey, eyes forward, Dad.
The swoop swerved and straightened again.
Look, I'm not the jury or the judge. Remember that I wanted to kill Jason on the spot? You stopped me, and I learned a big lesson. I'm just the detective, the prosecution. When I show you what I gathered, and Uncle Han and Aunt Leia, too, then you decide.
The swoop whipped through thin branches, and Ben ducked his head this way and that to avoid a smack in the face. Dad seemed to relive his wild rebel youth whenever he got on a bike.
So I'll lay out the case as objectively as I can. I've shown you the force-hiding trick, and you know Jason couldn't have found me on Cavan by chance. But that's not enough on its own. I'm laying out supporting evidence, and anything else I've found that's relevant, whether it supports my theory or not, like Lan Shevu taught me. I want to know the truth, even if I don't like it.
Luke didn't reply, but his shoulders lifted as if he'd shrugged. And Ben heard him gulp a breath. He didn't look over his shoulder this time.
Ben? Yeah?
Ben. Stang, he was crying. Ben, you make me so proud. You know that? You're so... decent.
Hey, come on. Come on.
Ben patted his back.
Doing the right thing isn't something special. It's the minimum. It's where we start each morning, not where we try to end up one day in the future. You taught me that.
Luke started to say something, but just shook his head and steered straight and more slowly. You asked me a question when you first joined the guard. Dad was getting too serious.
How to fasten my boots? Which end of the blaster I had to hold? Hey, I was just a kid then.
Luke managed a snort of laughter, the kind that could have tipped over too easily into a sob.
A rhetorical question, I think. How many people I killed when I fought the Empire? Oh, that.
And I said, but they were all... And then I had to stop because I hadn't thought about it before as much as I should have. I should never have said, but.
Dad, if you slow down any more, we're going to stall.
Okay.
Sorry.
Luke landed the swoop, and they sat in knee-high spiky grass, listening to the ticking of the cooling drive and the chorus of forest noises from animals they couldn't see. Ben laid his hand on his lightsaber just in case. He didn't feel quite as safe in the wilds as he'd thought. And you were right. Most of them were just ordinary troopers or ship's crew, who maybe didn't like the Empire very much, but had to earn a living, or couldn't say no. They weren't all Imperial fanatics set on galactic oppression. They were just people. And I was 19, and I probably felt deep down that if they weren't as ready to resist Palpatine as I was, then they had to be cowards, or evil, or something that made them unlike me, made them worth less than me. Luke swiveled as far as he could in the saddle to face Ben. I hadn't a clue about the politics, Ben. It wasn't really a cause I thought hard about. I just felt I had to save someone in trouble, so, yes, I killed a lot of people I wish I hadn't, and their lives weren't cheap or meaningless. And now, 5 crews are dead because I let Fondor know too much, and I feel terrible about that, too. Ben hadn't been expecting to unleash the floodgates. While a hug and tears didn't feel soppy or embarrassing now, complete bearing of souls was another matter. He didn't realize Luke had taken the comment to heart and fretted over it. He was mortified. He'd burdened his father at a time when it was the last thing he needed. He should have kept it to himself. I don't know what to say, Dad. You were everything to your mom. Luke just sat there, nodded as if he'd answered a question Ben hadn't heard, and started up the swoop bike again. They lifted clear of the grass and shot off. Rightly so. It had to be now. Ben had to say it. But it would have been better to look into Dad's face than to stare at the back of his head. I saw Mom on Cavan. I mean, I saw her, not like thinking you see someone in a crowd. She was a Force ghost. She spoke to me. Luke's knuckles were white as he gripped the steering vanes. What did she say? She said she loved me. Yeah, she would. What did you say to her?
Same.
You feel any easier now?
Go on. If you can't be totally open with your father now, when can you be? Have you seen her, Dad? I didn't want to say in case you felt ignored. No, that's the wrong word.
No, I haven't seen her. But that's okay. The Force gives us what we need. I've learned that. Luke didn't say anything else. Ben struggled not to think of Jason, because all he could do was rage silently. How could he have done this to Dad? How could he have made him suffer so much? If Jason had wanted to destroy Luke Skywalker, killing Mom was the way. It was worse than killing Luke himself. And Dad knew that, and yet he didn't let it finish him or change what he believed in. So Ben drew strength and example from that, and when he had these backsliding moments of angry, chest-crushing grief, as he probably always would, he reminded himself that this was why Dad always knew what was right, and why Jason either didn't know or didn't care. It was that start of the fork in the road, one atom's deviation that became 2 and then 4 and then diverged into different roads and then to different worlds. It was that baseline of right that Ben and Luke had just talked about. It was every new moment when you had to ask, is the next thing I'm going to do right, or is it wrong? It was a hair's width of a gap, and yet repeated with each breath, in each being, it became a chasm wide enough to swallow a galaxy. I don't know why Jason did it. I don't even have 100% proof. No point getting more upset about motive. Stay objective. Stay with the facts. Luke headed into the approach to the old Imperial outpost. Ben could now see two stealth X's being towed into launch positions and milling activity through the screen of trees and vines. Loyal ground crew who had abandoned everything they had on Coruscant to keep the Jedi Squadron operational. Droids, pilots, stewards, even the occasional Ewok party ferrying rustic packing crates out of sight. Ben walked around the landing gear of the nearest Stealth X and rehearsed how he'd recount the mission with Shevu to his father. "We voted to evacuate to a less accessible planet," Luke said, "depending on how Fondor goes." "More remote than Endor? That'll take some doing." "Less findable." "The mists. Han and Leia really know how to pick a hideaway." "Good move. How much time do I have to collate my evidence before we deploy to Fondor, then?" Jag was wandering in their direction, hands thrust deep in his pockets. Ben patted his jacket. "I don't want to have to take the forensics droid around with me, just in case. Losing evidence is..."
"You're not coming on the Fondor mission, Ben."
Usually, or at least until recently, Ben would have launched into an argument about why he wouldn't stay behind and how much Luke needed him, because he didn't want to miss anything. Now he had just felt a pang of alarm at yet another separation from his father, but his gut said, "Do what he needs you to do." He listened. "Okay, Dad." Luke waited a moment and then smiled, as if he'd been expecting the wrangling to start too. "I'm not cosseting you. You know that. This is for operational reasons, not protecting the boss's son."
"Understood. What do you want me to do while you're gone?"
"And you're coming back.
Have you an estimate of how long you're committing the Stealth X's?"
"I want you to plan the evacuation so that we're ready to hit the button and go at a moment's notice. I'm leaving at least half the Jedi pilots here, too."
"Relocation," Ben said.
He'd never planned and executed anything like that before. With the ancillary staff, there were nearly 1,000 beings and droids to move, plus equipment. He'd make sure he learned fast.
"We're not running from anyone."
"I'm glad you're not daunted by the task."
"It's common sense, Dad."
"You've got plenty." Luke patted his shoulders with both hands. "And you're a moral compass. If some of us don't come back, I want someone around who'll keep asking hard questions and saying, 'Should we do that? Is that right?' and who won't quit unless he gets answers." Ben hadn't seen himself in that light. He was the methodical one, the problem solver, the one who unpicked an issue, looked at the components, and tried to rebuild it better. Logistics. He knew he could do that. But moral certainty? Jason probably had his, too.
"I got this far on how Mom and Dad raised me. I'll deal with that as it comes."
He focused on his task, and not the fact that the maintenance crews were running up the Stealth X drive.
"Now, Dad? Right now?"
"I waited until you came back." "It's okay. The rest of the flight should be at Fondor by now."
"What are you planning, Dad?"
"The usual. Help Jason see the error of his ways."
"Okay.
If he wanted to play cryptic, Ben could handle that." A tech jogged up to Luke and handed him his helmet, which somehow made it all much more imminent and final.
"And Jason's enlisted the support of the Imperial Remnant," Luke finished. "Admiral Pelion? Wow. I'm not sure if that's good news or bad.
Yes. I hope everyone's moral compass is working.
Ben found himself doing what GAG troops did before an operation kicked off. He locked down the inevitable dread and let his mouth take over, laying a veneer of grim jokes over the anxiety to keep it from being seen.
Don't get killed, Dad. You know what it did to Fett. I don't want to end up like him.
Filthy rich?
No, polishing my dad's old ship and hassling Uncle Han.
It's okay. Jaina can get you a good deal on property in Keldabe.
I mean it, Dad.
So do I. Now go and stop worrying, or I swear I'll come back as a force ghost and bug you while you're on a date.
Ben winced inside.
Love you, Dad.
You too, Ben. Ben followed orders and didn't look back, but it hurt. Having Jag's grim face to focus on was a big help. The two of them walked on a collision course across the compound and ended up almost nose to nose.
You're grounded too, then, Ben said. Never mind.
Jag looked a little frayed.
I love being rear party. I live to stand around waiting for the comm to buzz. Have you heard from Jaina? Because I haven't.
No, but it's only been a week or so.
Ben had been too tied up to think too much about Jaina. He added that to his list of things to feel bad about.
She got there okay, didn't she?
I got a pre-composed arrived safely alert, yes.
Jag, if she'd had problems, Aunt Leia would feel it.
Maybe Fett's sold her off to the highest bidder.
She can look after herself.
What if she...
We'd know. We'd feel it.
Jag parted his lips, as if he was going to expand on it, but stopped.
Okay. I'll rely on you to tell me if you feel anything.
Sometimes, even with his closest friends, even though he worked so closely with guys like Shevu, Ben forgot he had senses that Jag didn't. At times like this, that must have frustrated Jag.
I'm going to draw up an evacuation plan.
How come you suddenly got older than me, Ben?
Never underestimate the calming power of a list.
It was a Shevuism. Shevu was full of common-sense one-liners that were easy to digest and apply.
Can you get all the senior personnel together for me? I've got something I have to do now, but we ought to make a start on scoping the size of the airlift and putting deadlines and names on tasks.
Jag just looked at him. Then he broke into a big, surprised grin.
Ben, you're middle-aged. Captain Sensible. Overnight.
I still reserve the right to revert to being a goofy kid and not tidy my room when the pressure's off.
Jag seemed to forget his black mood about Jaina's absence for a while.
I'll get your meeting set up, my lord.
Ben walked on a few paces before it struck him that he'd just slipped automatically into the organizing, order-giving role that his dad often did.
Because Dad never doubted I could do it.
That was the kind of confidence his father could instill in him. But he still had a task to complete first. Back in his quarters, he washed down all the surfaces with Stericlean, then laid out clean, flimsy sheets to cover the table so he could open the droid's sphere. Did a sterile area matter? The instruments and sensors had already analyzed what they needed, so contamination wasn't an issue. He had the readouts on his datapad. He knew the chemical composition of every trace the droid had collected. But he felt he had to show some respect. It was the only word he could think of for the procedure, and set the sphere down with a degree of reverence. It held destinies. Hair. Ben needed a hair from his mother's brush. It was all he had to do to confirm that the hair collected from the Stealth X was hers. Grubbing around in his father's quarters felt like an intrusion.
Luke kept the brush, a utilitarian gray plastial thing with bristles extruded from the material, in a box with a few trinkets and other personal effects he'd grabbed from the bedroom. And Ben suddenly found himself worrying about the apartment, and if it had been left intact. His mother's clothes and possessions were still there. He didn't care about his own. He just couldn't bear to think of Jason's bureaucrats clearing out the place or even touching anything personal. "It's just stuff. Forget it. Shrines are unhealthy. You know Mom's okay where she is. You've seen her." Just thinking that lifted his spirits more than he would ever have believed possible. "I know. I really know." Jedi suddenly seemed the luckiest beings in the galaxy. Ordinary beings never knew for sure what happened after death. Many sentient species believed in some existence when the body was no more, and some didn't. But only Jedi had the absolute proof of what happened to them. At least some, anyway. There were all kinds of priests and mystics who claimed they could put grieving families in touch with their loved ones in some afterlife. And maybe they could. But only Jedi knew and could prove it. It seemed both a breathtaking comfort and privilege, and also sadly unfair for everyone else. Certainty. There was so little of it in life. But Ben had his. Apart from the brush, its bristles tangled with a few long, curled, copper red and white hairs, there were two rings, a data chip, family holo images, Ben decided, and a platinum locket. Inside was a tiny, meticulously folded flimsy sheet. When he smoothed it out on his knee, it showed signs of having once been crumpled. His mother's writing was on it. "Gone hunting for a few days. Don't be mad at me, farm boy." Ben stared at it, imagining her hand moving across the surface, and put it back in the locket. He took the whole box back to his quarters and laid out the brush on the flimsy to tease out a hair with a pair of forceps. It was just a matter of inserting the hair into a small slot in the casing of the droid and letting the mechanism remove a section to process it. It took a minute or so. Ben waited. The droid flashed indicator lights and transmitted the analysis to his datapad. Positive match. That was it then. All over. Once he cracked the security seal on the droid, the sterile environment inside was compromised, and if he played by the Justice Department and CSF rules of evidence, anything else tested by the same droid would not be admissible as evidence. If he wanted to test more material after that, he'd have to sign out a new unit, sealed and authenticated. "No, that's it, my friend," he said, and overrode the contamination warnings. "I just want the hair." The droid was tiny, and its internal mechanisms were like some intricate chronomaker's art. Ben had to use the forceps to extract the sealed chamber with an almost invisible length of his mother's hair inside. Instead of being the glossy, coiled lock he had somehow imagined, which was crazy, there was no room for something that big, even if it had been lying around in Jason's cockpit. It was a single hair. Ben had a brushful of them, but somehow this one mattered. He wanted to keep it. He wound the hair around his finger into a ring shape and shut it in the locket with the flimsy note. He'd tell Dad he had it when the squadron returned from Fondor. "Dumb thing for a guy to carry around, but I want to." While Ben was copying the data to another pad for collation into a report, he checked his encrypted messages. Shevu had sent an update. "Ben, this might upset you, but you need to see it. I spoke to two Bith senators. They witnessed an argument between your mother and J.S. shortly before she left Coruscant for Hapes. Ben opened the file anyway, feeling immune to whatever might leap out at him. So, Mom had bawled out Jason in front of witnesses. She'd even accused him of being Sith and threatened him. But Shevu knew him well enough to know what would sting. It was over me. It was all over me. Oh, no. Mom, I was never worth that. It's too high a price. Seeing the cold evidence that she'd warned Jason to stay away from him threatened to crumble his fragile and newfound sense of peace. But then he looked at it through Shevu's eyes and wondered if the captain had thought this, that it could have looked as if Mara was the one who went after Jason and attacked him, not the other way around. It was a subtle twist to what Ben had already thought, that his mother had gone after Jason because she thought he was dangerous and had to be stopped. But it introduced a possibility that she might have intended to do more than arrest him. Ben knew Mom was tough. She was a trained assassin. She didn't shy away from fights. He wanted to cherish her memory as a blameless victim, above dark emotions like lethal vengeance. Am I upset? Part of him was proud that his mother had faced down a Sith Lord in combat. Part wondered how that squared with his recent understanding that vengeance wasn't justified, and part felt devastated that he was the motive, and that if only he'd seen Jason for what he was and shunned him, his mother might still be alive. A message came in on the datapad. Dad had just sent it before he jumped to hyperspace. Ben, I forgot to take Mara's locket with me. It's in the box in my quarters. If you have to clear out before we get back, please take good care of it. Ben clasped the locket in his closed fist and pressed it to his chest. I got it, Dad, he said aloud. I got it. Admiral's Day Cabin, Imperial Star Destroyer, Bloodfin, Ravelin Dockyard, Bastion.
How many years? Pelion asked. And I can't get over how lovely you still are. You've worn very well.
Dalla drummed her fingers in the exact rhythm he'd transmitted as the emergency call. She smiled. A real smile. Genuine warmth.
You called. I promised you I'd always come if you used that code. Just like Darakare. What's the problem?
The Galactic Alliance.
Yes. Jason Solo, unhindered by Admiral Neothel, going for the galactic record for the fastest plunge into bloody anarchy and most stylish black outfit. So, are you all dressed up to go to Fondor?
This was why Pelion was happy to admit that he was in awe of her. Dalla had vanished for, what, 20 years? 25? And she still had up-to-date intelligence. He'd lost count of the times she'd been written off, apparently defeated, even presumed killed, but still kept coming back to put a serious dent in the New Republic. It was almost thrilling to watch her beat the odds so consistently, even when she was a threat. And as far as Pelion was concerned, she still held an Imperial commission.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Dalla laughed.
You never could quite do the voice, but the intonation is perfect.
She reached across the gap between their chairs and patted his hand. Still the accomplished seducer. Not in a coy, subservient way, but with the absolute confidence of someone with real physical power who just happened to be a good-looking woman and knew it,
and understood that even the most resistant weren't wholly immune to it.
Yes, I might prefer to live in obscurity, but I'm neither deaf nor blind.
I won't even ask about your intelligence network, my dear.
She smiled and lit up the cabin again.
I never reveal my age or my sources.
I'm pleased to see that the Rin intelligence community still makes a good living.
And they're not the only ones.
I miss our little verbal sparring sessions, my dear.
So do I, Gil. But I'm here. What can I do for you?
Pelion had no idea if she had come empty-handed, or if she still had a fleet. She took ships with her every time she escaped. Vessels and experimental weapons technology had vanished into the Maw installation when Dala was running it as Grand Moff Tarkin's bit on the side, as the bitterly resentful male officers had called her, one of the less offensive names she'd been called. And Pelion had no idea how much she could roll out today. It might all have been rust, dust, and perished plastoids. It might have been the most advanced fleet in the galaxy, just waiting for the ideal moment to emerge and smash the concept of Republic for good. He had no way of knowing unless she showed him. She was still here despite the Yuuzhan Vong War, and that told him a great deal.
I'm asking you to watch my back, he said, at Fondor, and probably for some time after that. Perhaps some sweeping up, if Solo can't hold what he tries to grab. If he keeps winning, I want a counterweight ready to throw in before he turns on us like he turned on his allies and family. If he gets too cocky and loses, we'll have to step in and restore order, because the Confederation isn't capable of forming a galactic administration, and the remaining unaligned worlds are a complete shambles.
We do at least know how to run things.
How much weight can you add, Dala?
She crossed her legs and leaned back in the chair. The eye patch bothered him. It wasn't because it disfigured her. It lent her a rather raffish chic, in fact, and gave her one visible eye the impact of an emerald laser, but because he couldn't imagine what kind of injury required it. Eyes could be replaced, and she wore the patch as if she had been used to it for a long time.
I can, she said at last, have a full fleet at Fondor with 1 standard hour's lead time.
How much? How many?
Let's just say I don't waste resources I find, and a lot of worlds the GA doesn't notice owe me favors after the Vong War. The fleet won't be modern, but it will be deadly. Does that answer your question?
Pelion thought of all the prototypes and technology that the old Empire had funded and that had vanished and never seen the light of day. Dala must still have had capital ships in readiness. She'd escaped with Scylla at the very least. But a battle was a lot less about big ships these days and more about flexibility and agility. Small vessels could be much more of an asset.
"Jason Solo has half the GA 4th Fleet," he said.
Dala nodded.
"Fondor can rival that firepower. Not beat it, but it can give a good account of itself."
"But the GA hasn't committed enough ground troops to take and hold Fondor. Just the orbitals. Solo's heavy on ordnance, though."
So he's either going specifically to destroy their fleet, or he's not too choosy about the state he leaves the planet in.
Dalla hadn't touched her seer spirit.
Because if he doesn't destroy their fleet and subdue the planet, he won't be able to hold the orbitals. He'll be occupying them and fending off attacks. Busy job. Unless he plans to destroy them as well.
If you're asking me if I know his ultimate intention, no, I don't.
And you're committing Imperial forces on that basis?
I've gone into battle with far less.
And we've both seen governments start wars with no idea how they plan to end them, or even what to do once the initial targets have been taken. Gil, I hope that all you're planning to do is stand there holding Solo's coat while he has his scrap, waiting to see who wins.
Pelion believed in the value of his word. Integrity was a matter of honor. But it was also a pragmatic thing. If you did what you said you would, then your threats carried as much weight as your promises, and your pledges to allies secured tangible benefits. A liar lost friends fast in war. Pelion walked the fine line between not admitting that he had doubts about Jason and contingency plans if things went wrong for him, and misleading an ally.
If Bastion were attacked, would he risk his fleet for us?
Pelion was sure the answer was no. Jason Solo flew by the seat of his force-sensitive pants, which meant conventional planning with him was impossible. Pelion's only option was to be ready to pick up the pieces. The prize of Bilbringi and Borlias was looking increasingly irrelevant. A free gift that had a price tag all the same.
"Gil, are you still with me?"
Dalla asked, tapping his knee.
"Sorry, my dear."
"Do you want me to make you feel better about getting into this spot?"
She stood up as if to leave.
"This is about your sense of responsibility. Your home is safe, but there's a riot in the street. You feel you have to step outside and stop it. It might even damage your home if you don't."
"I'm not sure if that's welcome clarity or indulgent comfort for an old man, Dalla."
"And then you've got your greedy children clamoring to loot the stores that the riot has trashed. The moths are a handful. You should try my method of enforcing consensus."
"Ah, my queen of analogies."
Dalla had brought feuding Imperial warlords into line by gassing them. She never wasted time.
"I'll try reason first, I think.
I have no love for moths, Gil, and I plan to kill some of them."
Dalla opened the hatch and stepped out into the passage.
"Show me the ship."
Dalla was conspicuous. She didn't seem to care. By now, word of her arrival in port would have reached some of the moths, and those who weren't immediately panicking or huffing with outrage would at least be asking why she was back. Pelion escorted her through Bloodfin's decks, as if she were a routine visitor, showing her the most interesting aspects of the turbulent class design. The young crew had no idea who she was, but some of the veteran moths would recognize her, and all would know the name Dalla. Pelion didn't have to tell them about the assets she was ready to contribute to the Empire. If some moths were already being wooed by the GA before he was formally told a deal was on the table, then Jason would get to hear what Dalla's role might be. Pelion wanted his tactical surprise if he needed it.
"Are you serious about killing moths, Dalla?"
"Yes,"
she said,
admiring a spotless cannon bay that gleamed. She ran her hand over a bulkhead and followed the curved line of the cannon housing.
"Because they killed Legius. When I work out the full list of who was behind it, then I'll call them to account. Today I'm here for you, and to a lesser extent, for the Empire."
"Oh, I'm so very sorry. So very sorry."
Legius Vorn had been her first love, a pilot, something of a rogue, to be frank, and when Dalla had retreated to Peducus Corius after yet another spectacular escape from a lost battle, she had found him again. The lovers had been separated for years. It was upliftingly romantic, the promise of rediscovered happiness that every broken heart secretly longed for.
"How? And when?"
"A thermal detonator. I've waited 5 years to pursue the matter."
Dalla collected enemies. It went with the job. Her patience was frightening.
"Is this how you acquired your eye injury?"
"I still don't know if he was the main target, to spite me, or if he was collateral damage in an attempt on my life,"
Dalla said, seeming to ignore the question.
"I shall find out when I identify all the conspirators, and I'll make sure it takes some painful time. Then I'll have my eye repaired properly, but not before that day, so that I don't forget."
It didn't bode well for the Empire that its new ally was still at war with some, perhaps most, of its leaders. The Moffs had always been ferociously hostile, initially because she was a woman, and later because she was Dalla, and she did not suffer fools or less talented officers gladly. They were going to regret it now. It was their own fault. She never forgot, forgave, or gave up.
"Had I known, I wouldn't have disturbed you."
He put his hand gently on her back, to steer her this way and that. They were approaching the portside brow again, and an officer of more mature years did a double-take, a real head-turn followed by slightly parted lips. Pelion met his eyes, and it was clear that he thought he knew who she was.
"Just be aware that some of the Moffs are a little more enlightened these days, and you might even find them helpful. A powerful woman doesn't send them screaming to defend their manly territory. Lesserson, for one. The new breed."
"I'll make a note of his name and leave him intact,"
she said.
"I'll pick my moment. But I'll inform the Moffs that you are officially back on active service and advising me."
"Yes. The word fleet would start panic."
"Might scare Fondor into compliance, of course."
"Let's keep it as our little secret."
Dalla took his hand in both of hers and squeezed it.
"You keep a secure comlink open to me at all times. You tell me as early as possible when you plan to jump, and I promise I will be there. In minutes."
"Minutes?"
"I have a marshalling area in mind. One final short hyperspace jump. Trust me."
The brow security detail watched her stride down the gangway onto the jetty. Pelion estimated that the news of her visit would be all around Ravelin within 3 hours. The commander, who'd turned ashen on seeing her, walked up to Pelion and almost stood to attention.
"Sir, is that who I think it is?"
"The older sister of my unruly children,"
said Pelion. He felt a little urge for a joke at the man's expense.
Do you think it might be time to have our first female moth?
The commander was wisely lost for words. Pelion was pretty sure that Dala was happier being an admiral, but it was an amusing idea nonetheless. He smiled all the way back to his cabin, where he sat down to await the latest intelligence report. Dala hadn't asked about Neothel. She must have known the Mon-Cal Admiral's situation, though. It was as if everyone had separated the two GA chiefs of staff into the mystic in black who might turn rabid, and the sensible naval officer in white with whom they could do business, even if, in the Moff's minds anyway, she was inconveniently female. Dala and Neothel would have a great deal to discuss if they ever met. Pelion poured a small measure of seer spirit, dark as tarwood varnish, and splashed a little water into it. He raised the glass in a private toast.
"To ladies on the bridge," he said, "and gentlemen gone below."
Third Fleet Station, Ops Room, Fleet HQ.
"Admiral,"
Neothel was aware of the young lieutenant waiting at her elbow. Nimbanese, a rare sight in the fleet, made excellent support staff, and this one was a CVO, a casualty visiting officer. It was a neutral, detached title for someone whose job was to give next of kin the worst possible news.
"Admiral,"
Neothel turned.
"Apologies, Lieutenant. Did you want me?"
"Ma'am, the Mine Layer Squadron. I'm making a personal visit to the base. Is there anything you want me to do outside the normal arrangements?"
"Congratulations, Admiral. You got 100 of your own people killed before they even had time to take defensive action. That's what happens when you leak operational details. They're all from the same area, I understand."
"Yes, ma'am." The lieutenant kept glancing at her datapad, and when Neothel caught sight of the screen, it was a blur of text, a table of short lines. Names. "The squadron is a small and tight-knit community, as they often are in specialist units. It's a large number of casualties for them in a single engagement. We'll be offering extra support."
"Extra support."
It was hygienic, unemotional language, which was the only real alternative to disruptive outpourings of emotion. There were thousands of dead in this war so far. Neothel had learned to accept that very early in her career. But today she was looking at her own handiwork, a datapad screen of information that had left her hand and had come back to haunt her as a list of names, real beings, real families, her own doing. Officers took decisions knowing that some crew members wouldn't return, but this was totally new and shocking.
"What did you think would happen to the information you gave Luke Skywalker? What did he think would happen? Did you think Fondor would just send vessels to scare the mine layers away? A few shots across the bow? They blew them out of the sky, as you would have done."
It was always the small, stark incidents that became the pivots that changed everything. They were on a scale that an individual being could comprehend, like Captain Neville's son, Turl, or Lieutenant Tebbutt. Neothel gave up examining the continuum of blame, inevitable combat deaths, deaths caused by having to sacrifice a mission for a more critical one, deaths caused by incompetence, because there was only one category left beneath hers: callous and underhanded tactics, and that was personally taking a subordinate's life. That would put her in the sewer currently occupied by Jason Solo.
"I spied for the enemy," The families of those crews won't be any the less bereaved for knowing that I gave intelligence to a decent, honest Jedi to thwart the plans of a little tyrant ready to do anything, expend anyone, to win some ill-defined war on chaos. Tell them I'm sorry,
Neothel said at last.
Give them my personal and sincere apologies.
Very good, ma'am.
Neothel had to make an effort to get her attention back on the status boards and charts in the darkened ops room. The elements of the fourth fleet that Jason had deployed were 1 hour into the operation and should have been sitting out a blockade. Now the task force was exposed. The Fondorians knew it was there, and Jason's options were to abort, to attack, or to hold position while a new strategy was cobbled together. Battles went awry of plans all the time, but not like this. She had waited long enough at the comlink.
Colonel Solo,
she barked.
Will you talk to me now or not?
She had holovid and audio between Ops and the Anakin Solo. The holding screen shivered, and Jason appeared, standing with his hands clasped behind his back in front of the bank of weapons sensor consoles.
Admiral, we have an intelligence leak.
Keep your nerve. I realize that. What are your immediate plans? We have reports that Fondor is sitting tight and expecting an attack.
I realize that.
This might be the time to reopen talks, now you have their attention.
We've lost the advantage of locking them in.
Jason was totally calm. For a moment, Neothel was distracted by the arrival of Captain Pyrrhus in the ops room. Another Quarren, the commanding officer of Bounty. Neothel didn't share the common Mon Cal wariness of Quarren, and now felt an increasing bond with them that was only partly due to their common homeworld. They seemed more resolutely honest in the face of Jason's growing eccentricity than most humans.
Admiral, I plan to begin simultaneous attacks on 4 orbitals spaced around the planet, draw out their fleet, and neutralize it.
Orbitals usually carried defensive cannon, but were outgunned by Star Destroyers. Fondor would have to send support. In that respect, Jason made sense, but that was where it ended.
You'll blow the yards to pieces.
That may well happen.
This is a complete departure from what we agreed. It's turned into a sabotage run. What are you thinking? Good grief, Colonel. You can't make up battle plans on a whim.
I trust my force awareness.
To do what, exactly? What?
To make an example of Fondor.
Enough!
Neothel snapped. She didn't care that this was being played out in front of the ops room staff. If she'd had any sense, she would have taken advantage of Jason's absence from Coruscant to call an emergency meeting of the Senate, announce that she was relieving Jason of his duties, and declare herself sole chief of state. But that took time she didn't have, and created its own chaos and cascade of problems to follow, like where Jason might go and what he might do with his task force. She had to go out there and intervene. She had no faith in the Force to stop him spending thousands of lives to send out a message, and this was as good a time as any to bring him down. He might never be more overextended than he was now.
I don't want to hear that you have a feeling, or that you have certainty, or that you can meld. I want to hear times, ranges, troop strengths. Colonel, I'm now activating the 3rd Fleet Task Force, and I will be at your position in a little under 6 standard hours.
She expected Jason to snarl back at her, or at least spite her by starting the attack right away. Instead, he bowed his head a fraction, Jedi style, and smiled.
Very well, Admiral. With your assets and the Imperial Remnant's support, we can attempt to isolate Fondor itself with part of the task force, while the rest secures the orbitals one at a time.
Jason never capitulated to a better idea. Neothel had her unspoken warning. She closed the link, furious. Displaced rage fueled by her own guilt, she knew, and looked around at a silent ops room landscape of hunched backs as personnel tried to pretend they hadn't heard or seen the two chiefs of state arguing, and that Jason Solo didn't share basic information with her. Pyrrhus stood waiting.
He's gone too far. He has to go.
Neothel knew everyone must have heard her.
Captain, are we ready?
Yes, ma'am. The fleet is ready to slip. Admiral Macon sends his regards and says he's kept Ocean's seat warm for you.
A fleet speeder picked them up outside the building and whisked them to the fleet base.
You know what I miss most?
She said to Pyrrhus, wondering how she'd come to this after such a solid, predictable career.
Not having my own command.
You're the Supreme Commander, and Jaykos One, ma'am. You've got your own navy.
It's not the same, Pyrrhus. I move from ship to ship like some visiting mother-in-law, trampling over other commanders' territory, shoving them aside for the while, giving orders when they're used to being the voice on the bridge. I miss the simplicity. I miss the days when I knew a ship was my personal responsibility, and felt like home when I came on board, opened the cabin hatch, and stowed my belongings.
Flexible and responsive fleet, they call it. Remember?
I'm very old-fashioned.
That's commendable. But you're no longer required to go down with your ship.
Jason was very attached to the Anakin Solo, but it struck her as being in an accessory kind of way, like wanting the snazziest sports speeder in town. Suddenly she had a holotune-type image of a caricatured Jason in his black flapping cloak scrambling into the destroyer's last escape pod while poor Captain Neville stood bravely on the Anakin's burning bridge, mouth tentacles courageously straight, hand held rigid against his brow in a final salute as he did the decent thing that Jason wouldn't.
Let him burn, Neville.
The Third Fleet element of the task force had been standing by to leave orbit and jump since the Anakin Solo had passed out of comm contact. If she told Pyrrhus that she hadn't actually planned to confront Jason Solo like that, he wouldn't have believed her. What-ifs and contingencies had a habit of turning into reality for very good reasons, seeing as they were extrapolated from the possible twists and turns of the original plan. But sometimes they seemed to express a subconscious wish. If Neothel was going to relieve Jason Solo of command, then it was best done away from Coruscant, with space to let the fleet bring its power to bear. Coups needed planning. She knew because she'd helped Jason stage one. She'd been seduced a step at a time by what had looked pragmatic, and now she could look back and see how far she had fallen with him. It was time to halt the rot as best she could.
"It's the small things, isn't it, ma'am?"
Pyrrhus said, as he followed her into the launch that would transfer them to Bounty and Ocean.
"It's a snowflake that triggers the avalanche."
"Or a sun. Or 100 strangers. Or looking back on who you used to be before all this began." "I don't know how many of the commanders will follow me,"
Neothel said. She didn't define her destination. Clipping Jason's wings would be opportunistic,
a risk taken in an instant, and at least that left no conspiracy to be uncovered or others to be implicated if she tried and failed. Pyrrhus ran his hand down over his mouth tentacles like a human stroking a beard in thought.
"And we'll never know for sure until the moment it happens," he said. "But one thing I do know. We won't be alone."